This episode of Stick Like Glue Radio is brought to you by Jim Palmer's Stop Waiting For It to Get Easier Mastermind and Coaching Programs. Now is the time to create your dream business, and Jim Palmer is the perfect coach to help you get that done. Jim offers three different coaching programs, and as a member of his mastermind group, you'll also benefit from the advice, wisdom, and inspiration of other successful entrepreneurs. Learn more about Jim's mastermind and coaching programs at www.thenewsletterguru.com/coaching. www.thenewsletterguru.com/coaching. And get started building your dream business today. That's www.thenewsletterguru.com/coaching.
This is John Taffer from Bar Rescue, and you're listening to Stick Like Glue Radio.
Welcome to Stick Like Glue Radio, the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, and refer more. Marketing and business building expert Jim Palmer, known internationally as the Newsletter Guru, is a serial entrepreneur, author, speaker, and coach to other entrepreneurs. Jim is the host of Newsletter Guru TV, a weekly web TV show featuring Jim's unique brand of smart marketing and business building advice. Check it out today at www.newsletterguru.tv. Please welcome your host of Stick Like Glue Radio, Jim Palmer.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Stick Like Glue Radio. This is the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, and refer more. And those are always great things in any business. I am your host, Jim Palmer, your dream business coach. I'm committed to helping you build a more profitable business faster. And I'm very, very excited about this week's show because my special guest is an entrepreneur and franchise expert, Tom Scarter. Let me tell you just a little bit about Tom, and then we'll bring him on. Tom is a franchise expert. He worked for the New York subway system for 13 years and was frustrated with the bureaucracy and politics, and he wanted to be an entrepreneur but didn't know how. So like so many people, he saw franchising as the answer. He purchased a smoothie franchise in 2000. He built it and sold it within 5 years and semi-retired at 41 years old. Not too shabby. As a government worker with no business ownership experience, again, that was a pretty cool record. After selling his smoothie franchise in 2005, Franchoice, a franchise consulting firm, asked Tom to come on board and help people do what he did. He has been helping people figure out if franchising is for them for the last 9 years. Tom is one of only 1,004 certified franchise experts in the world, certified by the International Franchise Association. He is also the author of The Magic of Choosing Uncertainty, How to Manage Change, Embrace Fear, and Live a Fulfilled Life. I love the title. Tom, how you doing, by the way?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Jim.
It's a pleasure to speak with you. I know you live in New York. You have a couple children. You have a couple dogs. And so you're probably getting similar weather to me. I'm down in the Philadelphia area, by the way.
Yeah, it's a little gloomy today, but not going to let that get us down. We're going to, I think, have a great conversation. Thank you for that great intro. That was fabulous.
My pleasure. As we talked just really briefly before we went live, you know, I was in the early 90s, I was with a company called Bikeline. We had it was a chain of 14 stores, bicycle stores, exercise fitness stores. We franchised that to 80 stores in 18 states in about 4 years' time. And it's kind of a rocket ship ride, so I do have some experience. I'm always interested in franchising. And so first of all, tell us a little bit about your book, The Magic of Choosing Uncertainty. That's a title I'm sure not everybody goes looking for when they go to the bookstore.
Right. Yeah. And you know, it's tied to my franchise consulting experience that I've had. So the Magic of Choosing Uncertainty is really that kind of gray area, that chasm that's so scary to jump when you're making a decision, whether it's buying a business or, you know, leaving a relationship or moving across the country, you know, changing a career, whatever it might be. My book is there to help with some steps that I call fuel for change to help someone, you know, really get through that pivotal time in their life. The impetus for the book, though, was because I work with people that are looking to buy a franchise, and so many people kind of go in the other direction and go back to the unhappiness they were trying to get away from when they originally contacted me.
Yeah.
So, I was saying, you probably can understand this, having been around franchising, but when it comes down to that decision, it's not going to be the decision of which franchise, but the real decision is the decision between uncertainty and unhappiness.
It really is something. You know, we sold probably about 60 franchises, and I got to know, you know, all of the franchise owners pretty well. And, you know, the saying that's quite popular in the industry is you're in business for yourself but not by yourself. And I think one of the things franchise offers is the opportunity to hopefully, you know, with a good company, is to get a proven concept and kind of a blueprint, if you will. So it does help folks who have an overabundance of uncertainty. It gives them somewhat of when you're an entrepreneur, you never know. You put your foot out, you're not sure where it's going to land. But at least in a franchise, you got a pretty good idea what's next.
Right. And that's the beauty of franchising. It's a business with training wheels, is what I like to say.
That's a good one.
Yeah. And it's so apropos, I think. And what I like to stress, though, Jim, is that it's important to get involved with the right franchise company, because what people don't understand, people always ask me, how do you franchise a business? And they think that there's some kind of rules and regulations and boxes to check off on some bureaucratic form, but it's not. Anybody could franchise anything as long as you, get a franchise disclosure document printed and distributed to your prospective franchisees and just file that with the Federal Trade Commission. It's fine. Your business doesn't have to be able to make a profit or anything. Because if you could find somebody to buy it, you know, then good for you. So it's very, very important to make sure that you're getting involved with, you know, a company that has a track record and noteworthy and you know, just good.
Absolutely. I'm sure you'll probably agree with this, but folks have asked me on occasion about franchising their business. I say one thing you need to understand is whether it's a service-related business or you're selling products, it is a relationship business. I mean, I think of it almost like it's a public company. There's not necessarily stock trading hands, but everything is so – I just don't mean above boards in a legal or moral way, but everything is so on top for everybody to see, the good, the bad, the ugly, the number of units that go bad. You know, people can call franchisees and talk to them, and they could give you a glowing recommendation, or they can trash you. I mean, everything is out there for everybody to see. And what I find, you know, for a lot of entrepreneurs who are kind of, they're A-type drivers, they're in charge. When you have a franchise, as I said, it's kind of like having public stockholders. You have to answer to some other people.
Mm-hmm. That's so well said. I never heard it in an analogy such as that. That works for me. But you're right, and when I get calls probably on a weekly basis about franchising a business, which is not the end of the business that I do, but I could recommend some great folks that can help with that. I say, you know what, when you just got to be ready. I mean, if your business, you know, typically if you're an entrepreneur, you're getting into something because you really love it, and you know, if you love, you know, baking cupcakes and you're getting ready to franchise it. You have to live up. You have to give up that love of cupcakes, because what you're going to become is a sales and support business that happens to sell cupcakes, but you no longer are in that business of making cupcakes. It's going to be all about selling franchises and then supporting those franchisees. Does that make sense?
That's exactly right. Oh, it makes sense. You know, one of the things I remember, this franchise attorney that we worked with, he taught me so much. And he said, you know, once they sign the contracts, that goes in the drawer. And he said, Jim, you hope to God you never have to pull it out again. Because in reality, when you're supporting your franchisees, it's not a question of what you're legally obligated to do. It's what do you got to do to make them successful? Because he said, even if it's above and beyond what you're legally have to do according to the document, if you don't help them be successful – you will not sell another franchise, because they're all going to tell people they don't support you, even if you're doing what you're supposed to do.
Right. Yeah, it's scary for a lot of people that get into it for the wrong reason. And I always say to folks, you know, if you're the kind of person that joins the gym and think you're going to lose weight just because you joined the gym, don't buy a franchise because you can't. Just because you buy a franchise doesn't mean you're going to make money. You actually have to work it.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, if you own a gym franchise, you'll never have enough time to exercise again, probably. So
yeah, that's true, too.
Yeah. So, Tom, what do you think are the best franchises out there today? I mean, are they service-based? Are they home-based? Or?
You know, great question. Obviously, I get that one all the time. And it's really – it depends on the person and what's good for them. I mean – there's some great, great franchises out there, but they're not for everyone. So really what you have to do is kind of take an inventory of yourself, your skills, your personality, and really how you want to spend your day. But to answer your question and not kind of beat around the bush, I mean, service businesses are fantastic. I love service, meaning that somebody has a problem in their building, whether it's a commercial or a residential building. For instance, you have a service that comes in and takes care of that problem, whatever it might be. The other thing is to have a business that people really need and not want. You don't want to be involved in something that, you know, is the first thing people cancel when, you know, they lose their job or a recession hits or whatever it might be. So, you know, I love businesses, you know, like really unsexy businesses like water restoration. This is one of my favorite businesses. The folks that show up at your house when you have a fire or a flood to do the cleanup on behalf of the insurance company. That's what I love. But everybody starts with the food category in mind. And even I did when I first started. Because that, you know, ubiquitous. You use these franchises, you like them, they have the best sandwich or the best hoagie or the best, you know, ice cream or whatever it might be. But just because it's a great product or service doesn't mean it's a great thing for you to own.
Yeah. You know, you said something really that I happen to agree with as far as like the water restoration. And in my book, Stop Waiting for It to Get Easier, I talk about how profit, for some reason, has become almost like a bad word in this kind of culture that we're in right now. And I said, by the way, you know, for those people who are always talking about the greedy entrepreneurs, greedy business owners, you could look at a company like ServPro, and I'm not endorsing, I'm just using them as an example, but a company like ServPro is there for when people experience disaster, right? I mean, I think their motto is like it never happened. So whether it's fire or water or whatever, that company comes in, they have the equipment, the training, the personnel to come in and fix your home, and at that point you're really glad they're there. And the only reason they're there is because they do turn a profit, and they're there when tragedy strikes. So it's not a bad thing to be able to provide a service that people don't necessarily want, you know.
Right, it's exactly right, and that's a great example as a company, you know, to talk about. And then again, you know, you also have to realize it's inexpensive. It's going to be a tenth of the price of, you know, let's say a Dunkin' Donuts or something like that. It'll be less than half the price of a Subway sandwich shop. But on the other hand, you have to realize that it is an emergency type setup, and sometimes you're going to be called out in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. So again, you got to really know what you're getting into before you fall in love with something.
Tom, what are some of the ways that you can judge a good franchise from a bad one?
You know, the really, and you said it a few minutes ago, the best way to figure out if a franchise is really good is by talking to their franchisees. At the end of the day, as you also mentioned, there's a transparency, right? So the franchise disclosure document is a document that most people never heard of before unless you really looked at franchising, but That FDD, they call it for short, has 23 different items that every franchise company has to comment on. It's the law. One of those items is how many franchises left the system that year and how many were added. If you have a net loss of franchises just on paper, that's kind of a yellow flag. Also in that document is a list of every franchise owner in the country, whether there's 2 or 2,000 or whatever, they're all listed, and you're allowed to call them randomly to try to get on the phone and just ask them some great questions. And I always tell my clients the best question to ask is not how much money you're making, because, you know, money is a funny subject for some people and they don't want to talk about it. Ask the question, now that you know, now that you've been in it and you know what it's all about, would you do it again?
Yeah, that's a great one. And I always, used to tell people, by the way, if everything's going great, you can expect them to take credit. And if everything's going crappy, you can expect the franchisor to be at fault. Free warning of that business. Right. You know, I know investment levels, if people are thinking about it, they can range, you know, from $5,000 down, $25,000, $50,000 down. But, and again, I've been out of it for quite a while. What are you finding these days is kind of an investment level people can expect to make?
Well, I think that there's really three categories in my mind. Like, you talk about those service businesses. Those service businesses you can get into for as little as like $50,000, and I'm talking about the money to get up and started and having money on the side, you know, working capital for the first year. On the high end, that'll go to about $150,000. Then once you step up into stores, small stores, whether it's a Subway or down where you're at, the soft Philly soft pretzels, you know, the investment's going to be, you know, $200,000 on the low end, and it could go up to $500,000, depending on what you're serving. If you're like a Moe's Southwest Grill and you have seating and stuff like that, you could be looking at, you know, a $500,000 ticket to get the doors open and have some working capital. And then there's the big boys, the what they call quick service restaurants, QSRs, like, anything from McDonald's to Wendy's to Taco Bell to TGI Fridays, who just decided they're going to franchise all their units now. You're looking at, you know, $1 to $2 million as the investment.
Wow, that's crazy. Right. I mean, that's several year payoff, I would imagine. That's huge money.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And typically, like when you walk into, you know, an Applebee's or one of these kind of big restaurants, it's usually a restaurant conglomerate that owns the franchise. You know, they come in, they buy the rights to, you know, a whole state, and they put up 20 units over 10 years, and it's an investment, and they sell, you know, they're usually publicly traded companies, and it's not like, you know, Joe Smith owns this unit, you know, and he's feeding his kids and putting his kids through college with this restaurant. It's typically never like that. And one thing I like to share with people, Jim, is that, you know, you could buy a restaurant for $1 million or one of these bigger franchises and make, you know, a nice clean $300,000 a year as a profit. Or you could look at businesses that are service-based that are $100,000 and you make $100,000. And you might say, hey, let me think about that. I need to make $300,000. No. So you just buy three units for $300,000 and not have all your eggs in one basket.
And, yeah, I like that.
That's what I recommend.
What are some good questions to ask a franchise company, not necessarily, you know, talking to the current franchisees, but what would you advise someone asking the franchisor?
Well, I would, you know, I think I would go in, never thought about that. So I would go in and ask, you know, what's their vision, obviously, for the next 5 to 10 years. I think that would be good. I would ask, what are the pitfalls I should be aware of being a franchisee for your company? I think that would be a good one. How about, could you tell me the personality or the background traits of your top performers in your company? Because I want to be a top performer. That would be a good one.
That's a great question. I'm going to add to the pile. This is something when I'm actually interviewing prospective staff members, but I think it's pretty applicable. What excites you the most about this opportunity? So then, you know, they kind of get all excited, and then I say, all right, what worries you about this? And then they're kind of forced to give you a candid answer. And isn't that a good one?
I love that one. I love it. And I just heard somebody say, I was at a seminar, and they said that they ask their employee or their prospective employee, what's the latest business book you read or what CD is in your CD player right now?
Yes, and, good one.
It's interesting to hear the answers. It's really interesting.
Yeah, and I've also heard the book one. A take on the book one is, what are the last three books you read? Because most people can come up with one title, even if it's sitting on their shelf totally untapped. So you say, what are the three best, you know? You know, what I have found, Tom, what I found, Tom, is that a lot of folks in this economy, they're maybe 40, 45, 50 years old, and, you know, they're struggling to either find a job, they're underemployed right now, and a lot of folks do turn to franchising. Is, in your opinion, is 50 years old or somewhere around there, is that too old to get started?
Wow, that's interesting. Somebody just asked me that very question. And well, so here's what's funny, and some people are so surprised by this. So the average age of somebody buying a franchise, well, first of all, you never find a franchise owner as a first career. It's always a second career. Typically, you'll find the age of an average buyer somewhere around 42 years old is what we see. That was prior to the Great Recession. And now, for the past, you know, since whatever it's been, 2008 or so, the average age of a buyer has gone to 56 years old. Is that incredible?
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm shocked.
Yeah, because they're at the end of the very end, on the shoulder, on the cusp of the baby boomer generation, and they're too young to retire, and they don't have enough money to retire, and they're aged out of their job, and it's almost like age discrimination, and, you know, they'd rather bring in a kid for half the price than throw the wisdom out the window, and so... This is my everyday client right now. This is who I'm talking to on a daily basis.
Hmm. So it's probably hard to put a number on this, but, you know, how many franchise concepts are out there right now? I mean, other than the food and the service base.
Right.
I mean, there's probably hundreds of them, actually. But
well, so the International Franchise Association, which is a great resource if anybody wants to really get some good information, is franchise.org. O-R-G, they talk about more than 3,000 concepts that span 90 industries. So you can find almost anything you want to do, from picking up dog poop to flipping burgers. I mean, whatever you want to do, you can do in a franchise these days. It's amazing.
So what was that, franchise.org?
Yeah, franchise.org, that's the International Franchise Association.
And is that that's kind of the preeminent kind of authority or association in the franchise business?
Yes, by far. Yep.
Okay.
Yep,
remember my share of exhibits down in Washington. They used, I don't know, probably have them all over the place now, but I remember we went to Washington at least once a year.
Yep, that's right.
So let me ask you one other question, Tom, on is there any business that's not a good fit for franchising?
I would say a bad franchise is something that relies on the personality of the founder. So if I'm like the guru of, you know, I don't know, almost anything. I'm the guru of kickboxing. And I do really, really well because I'm kind of like a celebrity in kickboxing. It's hard to franchise that because you need that guru guy or girl to be the attraction for the business. There's no real secret sauce. And you need to have a leg up. And it's funny, I bring up kickboxing because there's a franchise here that's a kickboxing franchise called I Love Kickboxing. It's out of Long Island, and they have figured out they're for the franchise owner, it's not about kickboxing, it's about marketing. They are a marketing machine and drive people in the door, and that's all the franchise company does. They have upwards of 20 people just doing marketing and social media and all that stuff, and they drive people in the door, and it's incredible. It's a machine. It's just a machine. And that's pretty cool. That's the opposite of it. Yeah.
Yep. So, Tom, it's been a great interview, and it's been fun, kind of me tilling over old soil long ago, just laid there. But how can people get your book and learn more about you? What's a good website for that?
Well, for the book, it's just my name, tomscarda.com. That's Tom, and the last name is Scarda, S-C-A-R-D as in David A, Scarda, tomscarda.com. And for franchise info, and if anybody just wants to chat and had a quick question, I'm always open to talking on the phone or just a quick email, but franchisesavvy.net is the best place to get me over there. For franchising, Franchise Savvy, that's S-A-V-V, Victor, Y, .net, franchisesavvy.net.
Perfect. Tom, thank you so much for your time. I know you're a busy man. I greatly appreciate it. It's been a wonderful interview.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you, Jim, and we'll talk again soon.
Very good. Hey, folks, that wraps up this very special episode of Stick Like Glue Radio with entrepreneur and franchise expert Tom Scarda. Stick Like Glue is the only radio podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, and refer more. I am your host, Jim Palmer, your dream business coach. I'm committed to helping you build a more profitable business faster. Watch for another great episode of Stick Like Glue Radio next week. Until then, keep taking action, keep moving forward, and don't ever, ever, ever give up. Now go out there and do something nice for somebody today. Take care, everybody.
You've been listening to Stick Like Glue Radio, the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, and refer more. Stick Like Glue Radio features Jim Palmer's unique brand of smart marketing and business building advice for action-oriented entrepreneurs. To make sure you don't miss a single profit-boosting show, subscribe to this podcast at www.getjimpalmer.com. If you know other entrepreneurs looking for the fastest way to higher profits in their business, please tell them about the Stick Like Glue Radio podcast. Now go and implement what you've learned and boost your profits. See you next week for more Stick Like Glue Radio.